But we'll start off like this. Parshas Metzora. Okay, we got our second parsha all about the theme of Tzoras. So the question is, listen, this is a disease. I realize this is a disease. It's not leprosy. Don't even start thinking it's leprosy. I'm going to destroy everybody right now with leprosy. It has nothing to do with something. What it means is that we have this type of disease that the Torah decides to spend two entire parshios explaining how you get that and how to become tahor from it, how to purify yourself from it. What in the world is up with this disease and what does it mean? Tacitus, who's a Roman historian / philosopher back in the 3rd century CE, went ahead and wrote an entire part of his book about the Jews and said, really, based on these two parshios of Tzoras, on us having this leper-like condition, that's why we were chased out of Egypt. Not that we left Egypt. We never left Egypt. We were chased out of Egypt because we were lepers. We were thrown out of Egypt because we were lepers, and we had to leave out of Egypt, and we were thrown into the desert so we'd be by ourselves. And the Kohanim, the priests in our parsha, are really health regulators. They're doctors who are trying to take care of us to make sure that our leprosy will not spread to the other parts of the nations. They were like sanitary regulators as well. They were guys taking care of everything. It's just a little bit ridiculous that we're going to have all these parshas and they go into all these ridiculous things, these crazy things. What's going on here? So first of all, there's problems with saying all this. In order to become tame with Tzoras, to have the tumah of Tzoras, number one, you have to be in the process of becoming better. You cannot be in the process of becoming sick. Then you're not tame. Process of sick, meaning you see there's something wrong with you, you're not better. It's when your skin starts to heal a little bit, starts to get a little bit better, and that's when you become tame with Tzoras. So that's strange. It's not when you're really sick that you become tame. It's when you get a little bit better that you become tame. That's extremely strange. Number one. Number two, the only way you become tame is if the Kohen says this guy is tame. If the Kohen decides for whatever reason, I don't want to say anything, the guy's not tame no matter how much Tzoras he has. He can have Tzoras all over his body, this leprosy-like condition all over his body. It doesn't make a difference. The guy's not tame because the only way to become tame is if you say the words, you are tame, from the Kohen to the guy. Any other way, it doesn't work, which is crazy. The Kohen would actually never say anything during the 7 days of Mishneh, during the Sheva Brachos. He didn't do anything. If the guy was in Sheva Brachos, the guy was getting married, this is the worst, I can't imagine this, but during your Sheva Brachos, if all of a sudden you get a spot, you got to go to the Kohen, Kohen would not say a thing. He'd be like, call me after Sheva Brachos. Call me after it's all over. If you get it over the Chag, if you get it over Pesach, during Yom Tif, during Chol HaMoed, anytime over the Chag, Kohen would say, I'm not looking at you. I'm not going to look at you whatsoever. If it was Tzoras in the houses, and he heard, oh, there's something in your house, clear out all your furniture first, and then I'm going to go look at your house. He would delay saying it's Tameh until he thought like he could go in and everything will be taken care of. What? Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot also. Why? Korban Pesach he's allowed to eat. Yes, it's Tumas Mace that you're not allowed to Korban Pesach with, but everything else Nas. Not. It's just a little bit strange. You're allowed to delay. What kind of a thing is that? I mean, if it's something that you would think is contagious, then you think, don't let the guy get married. Don't let the guy have Sheva Brachos. Everybody's going to be around him. Don't let him go to the Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine that guy walking into the Beis HaMikdash? No, it's okay. The Kohen never said I was tame. You got white spots all over your body. You look strange. No, Kohen never said I was tame. But you're still tame. You can't just say, but he's not. He's not tame. It's just a crazy thing. Number two, it's only tame if it's in a visible part of your body. So meaning, if it's on your arm, it's tame. But if it's in a roll of fat, if you're like this huge 400-pound guy and you got a roll of fat, and it's inside the roll of fat, I'm not talking about one specific guy. You realize that. But there was a guy. You didn't see any Tzoras, did you?
But he had fat hanging out of his undershirt.
Oh, not a good call. Right, that's why I don't shop at Jewel anymore. By the way, if you have that guy who's got it inside the roll of fat, that's not Tzoras. It's not considered tummy. It's got to be in a place, even if he unrolls his fat and he says, look, I got this thing. The Kohen still would first, after he throws up, would say, listen, I'm not going to call it tummy. That stuff is not tummy. That stuff is nothing. That's number three. Number four, it only applies by a Jew and not somebody not Jewish. Somebody who's not Jewish, it doesn't apply to. So even if you would have Tzoras, and the Kohen would look at it and say, that's definitely Tzoras, there's no question. There's no such thing as tumah of Tzoras by a Goy. It doesn't apply by anybody else. It's only by us, it's not by anybody else. Number five, you only are thrown out of a city if you're in a walled city. Like Yerushalayim, maybe Tveria. That's about it. If it's not a walled city, you're not thrown out. it's a regular city like Chicago where we have an Eruv, but it's still not a walled city. You're not thrown out of the Eruv. You're not thrown out of anywhere. You just stay inside your house and you're fine. So that's strange. And we have another halacha. We know that if a person is entirely white, the halacha is he's tahor. That's ridiculous. That was in last week's parsha in Tazria. But if a guy is entirely white, he's got tzaras all over his body. He's got one. He's one big leper. He is the definition of a leper. He's got everything all over his body. He's just white. You look at him, you're like, I've never seen anybody so sick before in my life. You look albino, but I know yesterday you had regular skin. What's going on here? It's just like, listen, I am tahor. I got one big spot on my body. I'm 100% tahor. It's just so unbelievable. What in the world is going on over here? And plus, leprosy is defined by Webster's Dictionary as being dark patches of skin that are inflammatory, which means that they're like poking out from the skin itself. So ras is defined in the Torah by something white or yellowish with reddish tinges that look deeper into the skin. Not on top, not like a little mound or anything. They go deeper into the skin. It looks like you took a cut out of the skin. It's a lot different from what we would think of as leprosy. Aside from the fact of whether it's contagious or not, which happens to be a machlokas Rambam and Ramban. The Rambam says not contagious, the Ramban says it is contagious. The whole thing is extremely strange. Also, the process is off. What's the first thing you do by a leper? You put him out in the outside. You put him in the air. You let the wind go on top of him. You let the guy feel the air. You let the air try to heal him. You don't lock him up in a house. This guy, you don't let him change his clothes. You don't let him cut his hair. You sit him inside a house in the middle of the desert with all this stuff blowing around. All this stuff blowing around. And he has to sit there for 7 days straight without moving. Really without moving. He can't get out. He's not allowed to go outside that house. That's not a way of being Matara at Mitzorah. A guy with Saras is not going to get better that way unless it's something to do with Tshuva. That's the Or HaChaim's call over there. So what happens? So Rav Hirsch. I don't have too many boards from Rosh Hashanah Rafal Hirsch. I don't know if that's my problem or Rosh Hashanah Rafal Hirsch just didn't write for anybody but like Harvard professors. And even then, it's like maybe Yale. You know, like maybe it's up there. He wrote for like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and like guys who have an intellect of, you know, like an IQ of over 230. You know, or at least the person who translated it.
He wrote
of course,
in German.
Right, and he wrote in German, and then it was retranslated. Whoever translated it, it's just, and even the way it's it's hard. It's hard to read through, and to try to understand what he's trying to get at is a hard thing. But this, he's got a great piece. It's about 12 pages in the Hirsch Chumash, but it's an awesome piece. He says, if you notice, all the reasons that are given for getting tzaras, the reasons given for why people get leprosy, are all differences between Bein Adam L'Chaver, between one man and his friend. For example, Lashon Hara is the classic one. Speaking slander or speaking something bad about your friend. Speaking something about your friend. Now that definitely has to do with one friend and the other. There's also other things. Azus Metzach, being brazen. Or Gaiva, you know, having too much haughtiness, being too haughty. And there are other things all out there. Gezel is mentioned over there, stealing from somebody. Gilia Rai is sleeping with somebody else's wife. All these things are mentioned as reasons as to why Tzaras comes to a person. All of them, every single one. There are 16 reasons brought by Yaakov Ruvaini. 7 of them are mentioned in the Gemara. I forget offhand where it is, but I think it's in Nida. But all those reasons that are given all deal with Bein Adam L'Chavero, between one man and his fellow friend. Now the most unbelievable thing of this Bein Adam L'Chavero is that means that they're all based on deviance from social misbehaviors. In other words, these guys are a little bit off in their intercommunication skills between one man and their friend. What it means is that when a guy speaks Lashon Hara to your friend, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to teach this guy a lesson. You want to be friends? You want to be friends with other people? Do you want to make a friend? Let me show you how. Don't speak Lashon Hara, because when you speak Lashon Hara, I'm going to send you away from everybody else. You're going to be by yourself. Do you want to be by yourself? It's sort of like that kid in kindergarten, he gets thrown over to the corner. You know, the teacher like puts a dunce cap in his head. I just said, like, you know, put him right in the corner and just say, like, listen, you're going to spend the rest of your time in this corner. You're just going to have to spend the rest of your time there and just sit there because you got to understand what it's like to be with other people. You don't understand what it's like to be with other people? Then I'm sorry, my friend, you don't belong here. You can't be here. It's a strange, strange thing, but there's so many things over here. It's called a nega. Nega is the word of noga, as in a touch. It's like a touch from God. It's not God just saying to a person, listen, you did something wrong. He's touching you, and he's like, he's putting his finger and he's saying, Benji, stop it. I want you to stop it. He's saying you did something wrong. And he's like touching, he's saying, like, don't do it anymore. What happens when something fiery, something that's full of fire, like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, something that's full of ash, when it touches a person, it burns you. That burning is the indentation of the skin, that your skin goes a little bit inside and it shows white as a burn would on top of a body. And why white? Because it's a sign of death. You can't live with other people. When you can't live with other people, who do you belong with? You belong with the dead. So it's like we're saying, we're going to kill you. We want you to die. We don't want you with other people. You don't belong with other people until you learn what it's like to be with other people, until you learn what it's like to be among other people. Now that makes sense as to why there are sometimes the Kohen doesn't say anything to him. The Kohen looks at him and says, if it's Sheva Brachos, or if it's during the Chag, if it's during the holidays, there are tons of people around. Here is a perfect time for the guy to see from other people how you're supposed to act among people like you. Where you're supposed to look at other people and say, oh, here's how I'm supposed to act. Here's what I'm supposed to do, and here's what I'm not supposed to do. Here's why I'm supposed to not speak Lashon Hara. Because you look at other people and you say to yourself, oh, I realize that that's wrong. I realize that this is what I'm supposed to do, and this is something wrong. That's what's going on here. What you're doing basically is showing yourself, or seeing by yourself, what's wrong and what's not right. If the guy doesn't learn his lesson after that, then the Kohen looks at him and says, oh man, you spent 7 days with all these people and you still couldn't realize what's bad and what's not, what's good? That's ridiculous. Then we put you into seclusion and we say, get out of here. But the whole point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to tell you, don't think to yourself that I don't care about you. Don't think to yourself that I just want you to live your lives and make your own friends and do your own thing or whatever. I not only care about how you keep the Torah, I care about you and your friends. Do you want to have friends? Here, I'll show you what to do. Don't speak Lashon Hara. Don't be brazen. Don't have gaiva. And if you do something wrong, I'll tell you what to do to get rid of that so that you have friends again. And he touches you and he says, I'm paying attention. I'm with you. Don't worry about it. I'll show you what you're supposed to do. And that's what you're basically doing. You're showing him. He's showing us how much he cares about us. Now think about this for a second. That means that it makes a lot of sense. We only had the concept of Tsaras during the times of the first and second Beis HaMikdash, and in the desert. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt close with us, when he felt like he could talk to us, when we had a direct relationship with him, where we could go to the Beis HaMikdash and talk to him, and have a direct conversation with him, and say to him, hey, how's everything going? When we were able to go to the Beis HaMikdash and have that, that's when God rewarded us with the concept of Tsaras, and said to us, I'll tell you when you're doing something wrong. But when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took that away from us. And he said, I'm not going to tell you anymore. I'm not going to deal with you anymore. I'm going to say, forget it, I'm out. He pulled back his hand and said, I'm not going to touch you anymore. So we don't have the concept of Tsaras nowadays. It doesn't exist nowadays. That's why it doesn't exist by non-Jews. Jews can have that close connection with God. But people that aren't Jewish, they don't have that connection. That connection's not so close. For God to care about their friends, for God to care that they're happy with their interpersonal lives, God cares about them immensely, enough to give them parnasa, enough to care about where they're going and what they're doing and things like that. But in their interpersonal lives, for them to have a friend or do stuff like that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't care about them as much as he does about the Jews. And he gives us that special punishment, a nega, to show us how close it is. You can even say a little bit further, that a goy wouldn't understand. Only Jews can understand the concept of a punishment really being a reward. A punishment really helping us instead of punishing us. A non-Jew doesn't really understand that. If it's a punishment, it's a punishment. You're telling me it's a reward? Come on. How can that be a reward? They don't understand that concept. But we can understand that. That's the difference why HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do it with us. There's another Yalkut Ruvaini that says it only exists by Talmidei Chachamim. And it can only exist in Yerushalayim. Because only people that are holy can understand this concept. But not somebody who's just Tam. If I would get Saras, all I'd say is, come on God, what do you do to me? Why in the world did he give me this punishment? Why am I being punished to be sent away, not be together with my kids, not be able to be with my wife, I'm not allowed to go anywhere near my family for 7 full days, maybe even 14 days? It's ridiculous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you punishing me like this? But the fact is, it's not a punishment, it's a reward to show us how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares, how much he wants me to keep my relationship with my kid, how much he wants me to keep my relationship with my wife, and everything similar to that. I think that's the basic idea for what we want to do with that. But Wolfson goes on Unbelievable. So what about nowadays? So we don't have it. We don't have Torahs. But what do we do nowadays? You can't say that God just took it away from us and now it's gone. There's nothing we can do. Because, come on, there's got to be something. Something that we have. So listen to this. I heard this. I think I read this 5 years ago. And it never really like hit me because it was in one of my notebooks. And I was like, I don't get this. And I saw it again this year and I realized, like, you know, that's really crazy. There's another thing of being sent outside the machane, being outside the camp. You know what chutz l'machane applies? In your davening. Outside the camp means your mind is not in the sitter. We are outside the sitter completely. You know how you start davening, you start your Shemone Esrei, and immediately as soon as you start, the first thing that comes into your head is, if you're a Chicagoan, a Cubs or White Sox game, if you're outside of Chicago, I don't know, it could be anything. First thing that pops into your head is all of a sudden, I don't know, the Bulls are not making the playoffs, the Blackhawks are not making the playoffs, there was a movie that I just saw, there was this computer thing that I just had, there was this problem at work that I just had, there was this thing that just, all of a sudden, everything that you did not, before Shemone Esrei starts, you're sitting there, your mind is clear. It's crystal clear. You're thinking there and you're like thinking like unbelievable thoughts of holiness. You're like, oh, I'm so holy. Then all of a sudden you start, Baruch. And all of a sudden it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You got like everything in your head from like the new movies that are out there and everything. Everything's in your head. Like the craziest things. You're like fighting aliens to the point in the middle of your Shemone Esrei, you're like going like that. And then you stop and you're just like, anybody see me? You know that guy who like, you know, on Shemone Esrei on Shabbos, he's like doing Slach Lanu. Then all of a sudden realizes he's doing it. So he turns around and looks at everybody and he's just like... Like slowly but surely, like puts his hand in his pocket, you know, tries to find a tissue, like, you know, like puts it around. That's what's happening. Because you space out like a monkey when you have tsaras. When you deserve tsaras, tsaras is not just a leprosy that you have something on your body. It is being sent outside the machane, having your thoughts go outside of what the proper thoughts should be. Your thoughts are completely off from where your proper thoughts should be, especially in your Shemone Esrei, especially during your davening. It's a scary, scary thing. That means we all have tzaras, unless there's a person here that says that he can concentrate fully on his Shemone Esrei, which I believe is a full lie. But you know why? Because we speak Lashon Hara. And if we would stop ourselves from speaking Lashon Hara, if we would stop ourselves from doing that, then your minds would be clear. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would allow our minds to be able to be crystal clear, and we'd be able to daven again. We'd be able to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'd be able to be there. That's why the Chafetz Chaim says, the Beis HaMikdash cannot be built again until we stop saying Lashon Hara. Because if we say Lashon Hara, we can't daven. And if we can't daven, what's the point of the Beis HaMikdash? You want God to get angrier at us? He's angry at us right now for davening while we're spacing out like monkeys. Do you think He's not going to get angrier if we space out like monkeys in the Beis HaMikdash? We have to bring ourselves to the point where we can actually concentrate. And then we'll be able to daven. And then we'll deserve the Beis HaMikdash. That's supposed to be the point over here. But there's more. All right, there's always more. That's Shari Tefillah and everything. But also, you don't feel the Kiddusha of Shabbos, and you don't feel the sweetness of learning. When you're sent outside the camp, what you're thinking of are all the other things in the world, but not what you're learning. You don't feel Shabbos. You know those guys who are sitting there on Shabbos? They're sitting there all Shabbos long, and all they're doing is they're waiting for the three stars to come out so they can go somewhere. The guys that are just like, Shabbos ends at 7:32. 7:33, they're already in their car. They got everything ready. They're already in their car, and they're already out going somewhere. Those guys, the reason why that's so, and the reason why they don't feel the Kiddusha of Shabbos, and they don't want to feel the Kiddush of Shabbos, is because it's Tzaras, says Rav Wolfson. It's because it's Tzaras. When you have Tzaras, you're sent outside the camp. You can't feel the sweetness of learning. You don't feel it within you. It's such a crazy, crazy concept. And also when you're learning, you sit there and you're learning. And all like, you sit there and you're like, I don't get it. I don't get this Rashi. I don't get this Tosfos. I don't know what the Gemara is trying to say. And all of a sudden you're just like, alright, let's just bottle. And that's what happens? It's because it's Tzaras. It's because you spoke Lashon Hara. You speak about something else, and because you spoke that, all of a sudden, and you think it's going to be, if you're learning, and all of a sudden you speak Lashon Hara while you're learning with somebody, you're sitting with Chavrusa, and you say, hey, look at that guy over there. Then you try to go back to learn, you're not going to be able to concentrate on your learning. There's no way. You won't be able to concentrate at all. So what are you supposed to do? You're messing up your davening, you're messing up your learning, and you're messing up basically everything in your life. Basically everything, including Shabbos. You're not set, you don't get Gan Eden. You don't feel the Kiddusha of Shabbos at all. You just feel like Shabbos is a hindrance. I can't do what I really want to do. So why is that? What should you do to get out of it? Unbelievable. Mitzora always falls around either before or after, depending on the year, if it's an Ober year or not, Pesach. Pesach is all about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Pesach stands for Pesach. Peh is your mouth, Sach is to talk. The whole point of Pesach is to use your mouth for the holy reasons and not use it for Tumah. To use your mouth to say the right things. You can use this night of Pesach to make yourself have more Amunah and to include in yourself more Kedusha than you've ever had before. The more power you get on this night, the more power you have to concentrate in your tefillah. I can't guarantee it, but I have felt this before. Your tefillah is supposed to be more special the day after Pesach. The hallel that you say on Pesach night is your best hallel of all year. Because that night has such power that it can make your tefillah the next day more powerful. That is, if you get up. You have to get up the next day. But as long as you get up on time, your tefillah is so powerful, has so much koach, it makes you really feel something. By saying more Kedusha things at the right times, it can take away the tumah, it can take away the bad, and can lead you into good. It can destroy the tzaras within you. It can destroy that non-holiness within you, for lack of a better word, and make you into more of a kadosh person, and make you into somebody that you'll finally be able to concentrate in your davening. You'll finally be able to concentrate on your Shabbos, and you'll be able to concentrate on your learning, and you'll realize what you're missing. You'll sit there and you'll learn, and you'll be like, wow, this stuff is crazy. How have I never concentrated on this before? How have I never really cared about this before? That's what's going to happen, and it's going to feel good. It's finally going to feel good. You're going to be like that guy who walks around, who mamash walks around and speaks only about Rav and Abaye. He like walks in the street, just like, I can't believe what Rava said. Man, that Abaye, what a crazy man. You know, and we look at him as if this guy's crazy. That guy's awesome. That guy is absolutely awesome. I remember seeing a guy like that in Eretz Yisrael. It was my first year in Eretz Yisrael, and I saw this guy walking back and forth in between the two parts of a bus stop, going like, man, Rava, what are you talking about? Screaming. And I was like, okay, and I went to the other bus stop. I was like, there's no way I'm going to stand by this guy. That guy is awesome. What is that guy thinking? All his thoughts are on Rava. Can you imagine having such a guy? Having a guy that's that tall? Having a guy that's that pure? That all he thinks about is that? Unbelievable. We might not be on that level. We may not be on that level. But at least to be on the level where this can happen to you. I'm walking into a suit store. Over there on Tui, 2020, whatever it's called. Walk inside. And I see an old Rebbe of mine from 6th grade, Rabbi Levinson. Rabbi Reuven Levinson. I'm sure everybody knows him. He's a guy, he sings, he's got the guitar, he's got, you know, Bar Yochai, he's got these famous songs and everything. Goes out there, I go inside there, I see him, I immediately walk over to him, right? I want to say Shalom Aleichem to him, just say whatever it is, you know? Walks over to me. What's Pshat in Kechol Mayom? First thing he says to me, doesn't even say Shalom Aleichem to me. What's Pshat in Kechol Mayom? So I'm like, well, there's a Balaturim. Start saying to him, like offhand, like first thing, he's like, that's not Pshat. And he tells me a Pshat in Kechol Mayom. I still remember it. Maybe when we get to Parshas Vayera, I'll tell it over. But there's still a Pshat in Kechol Mayom. The only thought that he says, the only thought that he had when he first met me in the suit store was that, Kechol Mayom. That's what he was thinking about while he's buying a suit. Not, is this gray, or is it blue, or is it black, is it going to look good on me, or anything like that. He got his suit, walked out, all he's thinking about is Kechol Mayom. First thing he says to me, as soon as he finishes the board, he's like, have a nice day. Walks away. I'm like, but I want to speak Lashon Hara. Like, I have somebody to talk about. Like, what's going on? Just come back, please. Who else am I going to tell this to? But no, all his thoughts are on Torah. It's a crazy, crazy level. It's an unbelievable thing. Just so you know, when a person wakes up in the middle of the night, it's supposed to be because he said Lashon Hara during the day. And when your neshama goes up in Shemayim, says the Miyam Loez, there's not only a tzaras on the body, there's a tzaras on the neshama. And that's what we're talking about with this tzaras. We don't have the tzaras on the goof anymore, but we do have the tzaras on the neshama. That tzaras on the neshama makes your neshama wake up in the middle of the night. It's kicked out of Gan Eden. Every night your neshama goes up to Gan Eden and tries to get to a certain level. And every night if you wake up in the middle of the night, barring any total mishaps, your neshama is kicked out of Shemayim, thrown out of Shemayim, and they say to you, get out of here. Tomei Ikra. They call you Tomei. They say that if you do tshuva, you'll be able to come back. But if you don't do tshuva, you're put into the fourth level of Gehenim. It's known as the level of Tita Yavein. It's called called the mud of Greece. I don't know what that is exactly. And it'll get you suin kushin. What's the word? Ugedoa. Not good stuff. That's if you die with it. Chavetz Chaim mentions that, but it's brought down by the Yalkut Ruvain. It's a scary, scary thing. Isn't it worth it to start thinking about maybe, like, I don't know, learning a halakha about Lashon Hara? Or maybe not being makabel Lashon Hara that's being told to you every single day? Something to even think about. Even if you don't do one little bit of Lashon Hara this week just because of that, it's all worth it. At least you stop yourself from one Lashon Hara. And don't tell me, oh, I'll never be able to do it. And don't try to stop yourself cold turkey. It never works. Only do like the 15 minutes. You know, set aside a time from 1 a.m. to 1:15 a.m. in the morning. I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. And don't tell me, well, then I'll be fine, right? Nothing's going to happen. I once did this. And I said I'm going to do it from 3 to 3:30 a.m. because I wanted to burn everybody. So like, yeah, I can do it. 3 to 3:30 a.m. Every morning, I will not speak Lashon Hara. I was sitting in the Beis Medrash on a Thursday night. I was 30, I think. It's 3:25 in the morning. A guy calls me up on the phone. I didn't realize it. Like, I didn't realize what time it was or anything. Pick up the phone. Guy's like, you'll never believe what happened to this guy. So this guy calls me from America. Never believe what happened to this guy. I'm like, what happened? He tells me. Right? I'm like, oh, that's crazy. He's like, I'm like, that it? He's like, yeah. I hang up the phone. Look at the clock. 3:30 exactly. I'm like, you stupid Satan. What do you want me to do? What else could I have possibly done to get out of this? But no. Satan realizes this. He's ready to nail you. He knows 3 to 3:30? Come on. I'll get you. There's no problem. Try to make it at a time where you're awake and you know you can set aside an alarm on your clock and just be like, from 1 to 1:05 p.m., I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. It'll work if you really concentrate on it. Set an alarm on it. Spend 5 minutes. And no matter who calls you, don't pick up the phone. I don't care who calls you. Even if it, especially if it's me. Don't call. Don't pick up the phone. Hang up the phone. Because you never know. You never know what's going to happen. Okay. Where does Tzoras start from? I'm losing my voice. Not good. Either way, Tzoras starts from the following. Tzoras first was given by the first thing to speak Lashon Hara. Who was the first thing to speak Lashon Hara? Who knows? The Nachash. The Nachash in Gan Eden spoke Lashon Hara about God. God doesn't want you to eat from this tree because he knows that if you eat from the tree, you're going to become like him. Spoke the first Lashon Hara about God. This is what God told Adam Rishon. So what happened to the snake? It got Tzoras. Says to Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Tzoras of the snake is the scales of the snake. And that's why it continuously sheds its skin. It sheds its skin because it always has Tzoras and it hurts it more and more and more and it keeps having to shed it because it gets dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. It has Tzoras. Maybe the fact that you keep snakes is what gives some people Tzoras. I don't know. It depends if it's catchy or not. But the first thing to get Tzoras was the original Nachash, the original snake. And all snakes got it after him. All snakes continue on the sin of the Nachash. If what? What do you mean, people? It's not the same thing. Definitely. I don't know the last time you had a whole thing of skin that fell off you and you just left it on the ground. You're just like, here's Yaakov Lo, the skin. That never happens, you know? Yeah, that's unnatural. It's not right to sit in UV rays for that long. It's not a smart thing to do. I mean, you can be dumb and just say like, hey, I want to shed, you know? But that's not a normal thing for a person to decide to do. But the idea behind the Nachash is if you continue in the ways of the Nachash, then what you become is the Nachash. You get the scales of the Nachash. And I don't mean scales that's in the lizard king that lives in England who decided to change his whole body into becoming a lizard. I mean, you get Tzoras on your body. No, it's disgusting. You got to see him. Turn his tongue into... Okay, whatever. Either way, it's nothing like that. It's a guy who honestly, he takes the tumah of the Nachash and puts it upon himself. The tumah of the Nachash is known as the tumah of the shore and the chamor. The shore is supposed to be the shore of tumah, the axe of tumah, who's supposed to stand for Esav. I've talked about this before, how shore is supposed to be Esav, ayin, sin, vav. It's supposed to be the gematria of shore, 506, 506 altogether. Ayin, with ayin yud nun. Sin is sin yud nun, and vav, 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 vav. Supposed to be the, altogether is the gematria of shore. Okay, whatever. That's a balaturim. But the shore is one type of tumah, the goring type of tumah that knocks things down. There's another tumah called the chamor, the donkey. Amadom al-chamor, which is supposed to stand for Yishmael, the pure tomb of Yishmael. Combine the shor and the chamor, and you come out with the Egel Azov. The Egel Azov was a shor, half of it was a shor, half of it was a chamor. It was a complete and utter tumah that was beyond anything you understand. It wasn't a real calf, a golden calf. It was a golden donkey and a golden axe put together all in one. The tsaras that you get is that tumah of the shor and the chamor put together. It's the tumah of the nachash, the tumah of the Egel Azov, all put together in one. That's why tsaras is a gematria of 760, same gematria as shor and chamor put together. Shor is 506, chamor is 254 plus 506 is altogether 760. It's supposed to equal together. That's where the tumah comes from. The idea behind that is supposed to be so big. Nega ra, an evil nega, a bad touch. I know we spoke about nega being a good thing. Nega ra is supposed to stand for, if I remember correctly, Nephilim, Gidolim, Anakim, Rephaim, Amalek. That's what's supposed to stand for. All the giants in the world, the giants of tumah that were supposed to be in Hebron, all the giants of tumah and everything out there, is supposed to be what this nega stands for. I don't totally get that connection and why that connects with the nachash and the tsaras of the shor and the chamor, but somehow it all goes together to become a complete tumah that's terrible, that's absolutely terrible. What we're supposed to do in the tahara, says Parshas Metzora, is take a bird and send it away. We take that bird, a tzipor, and we send it away into the fields. The point behind that sending away the bird is supposed to be like a sir la'azazel. It's like the goat that on Yom Kippur we send to the cliff of Azazel. Why do we do such a thing? It's supposed to be like bribery to the Satan. We say to the Satan, here, take this and don't accuse us anymore. Not like a korban to the shadim, not a korban to the demons out there, but really what it is saying to the demons, you want something? Here it is, take that. We're keeping everything else for ourselves. We're keeping the Kiddush for ourselves. Stop accusing us of everything. We'll give you one thing, leave us alone with everything else. We give them a tzipor and we say, take this tzipor, let that be for yourselves, and we'll keep everything else we'll keep the Kiddush by ourselves. We're kilu, taking our tzaras, giving over the bird, sending the bird out. There's a big machlokas if you're allowed to eat that bird. If you're allowed to eat that bird, if somebody catches it, if somebody gets a net, like as soon as the guy sends out the bird that catches it, I'm allowed to eat that bird. And in fact, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, if the bird comes back, that means that tzaras is going to come back. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not ready to send that guy away from tzaras. The guy still has tzaras with him. That connects with Nida at the end of the Parsha, by the way. Why we go into Nida, maybe even Zava at the end of the Parsha. There is only one person, only one animal in the entire animal kingdom that is the concept of a menstrual cycle. I don't mean a menstrual cycle of inside the body. I mean that bleeds outside their body during the times of their menstrual cycle. Every animal that has a menstrual cycle does not bleed outside their body, or if they do, it's extremely minimal. Extremely minimal. You never see a female cow all of a sudden start bleeding out of that area. You never see a female chicken all of a sudden bleeding outside of that area. Only by a woman do you find such a concept. It's a crazy thing. Something that science has not yet explained. They say there's always a menstrual cycle, but women, for some reason, are prone to bleeding outside their body. And they have to wear things outside their body to stop themselves. You don't often see female cows with little diapers on, you know, to stop themselves from stuff like that.
With cattle or animals, isn't it seasonal rather than...
It somewhat is seasonal rather than cyclical, but rabbits are not. Rats are not. All these types of animals and bugs, most birds, are not cyclical. They go whenever they want. They're able to give birth to a kid, and there is some type of a cycle. And for some reason, it's only true by an adam that you have this type of a cycle in which you bleed outside the body. The pshat is, where did Chava get that punishment from? From the nachash. So in this parsha of Metzora, we go into all these things of Zav and Zava and Nida and all these crazy other types of things, because they're all connected. The Tzoras came from the Nachash, Nida came from the Nachash, Zav came from the Nachash, Keri came from the Nachash. Everything that we have that's tumah within a human body, which is something that we get rid of, or something that we take upon ourselves, whether it's Tzoras or anything that we get rid of in some type of blood or some type of Zav or whatever it is, they all have to do with what happened with the first original sin between Adam and Chava, between that one sin between Chava and the Nachash. That connection with us and the Nachash, and continue continuing in the ways of the Nachash by sinning, that's what messes us over. But in the future, in the days of Mashiach, no longer will we have Nida. No longer will there be a concept of Nida. Yemosa Mashiach, there's a pasuk in Tehillim, Hashem Matira Surim. And we actually make the bracha every morning, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Matira Surim. But we even say it in the Halukas, Hashem Matira Surim, in Kuf Mem Bav Dalet, I think it is. The Medrash Tehillim says on that pasuk, I'm sorry? Matira Surim, right, without the Hashem's name. Matira Surim. So it does say Matira Surim. The Pshat and the pasuk says the Medrash Tehillim, that in the future there will be no such thing as Nida. All women will be mutter their husbands at all times. There will always be a heter for Nida. Always be a heter. Why? Because the whole reason why we have Nida is because of the Nachash. Because we continue in the ways of the Nachash and we keep sinning. But when we stop sinning in the days of Mashiach and we no longer have any sins, then all of a sudden everything's gone. And everything's fine. And then you're not going to have any women that are going ahead and having Nida. Men are not going to have to work because everything's going to be given to us for free because the whole sin gave us the we were forced to have to work the land. Everything is now done and everything's going to be different. It's going to be a different type of a world. That's the idea of what's going to happen in those times. It's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be absolutely unbelievable. Now, there's one last thing that I want to go through. What time we got? Okay, one last thing that I want to go through. I don't think we're going to have so much stuff. There's another thing. So Ras in houses, Chazal say it's impossible. Never was, never will be. There never has been Saras in houses, never will be Saras in houses. Very strange. But Chazal say there are different reasons as to why Saras goes inside the house. The famous reason given by the Gemara, is that if a person is stingy and doesn't want to lend out his kelim to his friend, so God will come along and give Saras in his house so that he'll have to take all his kelim out of the house so that they won't become tamei. And when a guy goes up to a person and says, hey, do you have a shovel I can borrow? Right? So the guy will be like, no, I don't have a shovel. And all of a sudden he'll get Saras in his house. He'll bring out all his stuff and he'll show his shovel. Because like, hey, I thought you didn't have a shovel. He'll be like, oh, I just found it. Okay. It'll be a very upsetting situation. One of those upsetting situations. Obviously, you know, like a guy is going to sit there and be like, I feel bad that I didn't lend this guy in the first place. That's number one. That's one reason given by the Gemara. It's given in Rashi. That's the Pasha reason. Second reason given by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the Gemara, in Masechet Nida, is given down that when we, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to find the treasures of the Amorim. The Amorim hid their treasures before the Jews came to Eretz Yisrael. In order to find those treasures, Hashem will put Saras in the houses. We'll have to knock down the walls of the house and we'll find the treasures. That'll be awesome. We'll get treasures inside the house. Now that's a little weird. We have to knock down our house to go find a treasure and God will do a punishment to our house in order to find that treasure. That's weird. And there's another opinion also said by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the Zohar that said because the Amorim put Tuma inside their houses, they put it inside the walls, so that when a Jew took over the non-Jew's house when they first came to Eretz Yisrael, they had to knock down the houses and not use those stones or sticks because they were full of tumah, full of all this crazy stuff. Parentheses. Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz, famous genius from the 17th century, says an unbelievable thing. Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz says that the two reasons go together. That the pshat is, I shouldn't say boat, whatever, says that the Amorim put the treasures in their walls and put the tuma inside the walls to make sure nobody would find the treasures. They put shadim inside, their demons, to watch over these treasures and make sure that nobody would go anywhere near there. Nobody would touch their gold that was inside their walls. There were little demons inside that wall that would be stuck there, forced inside there by the Amorim, and they wouldn't be able to leave. They'd have to sit on top of the treasures and make sure nobody comes near them. Very close to being like a genie, right? I always thought, and I know it's not true because the Latin form of the word is not this way. That's the shot behind a leprechaun. That a leprechaun is always supposed to be, the leprechauns watch their pot of gold. And they're known, the only reason why you find a leprechaun is when you knock down the house because of leprosy. Now, it's not true, Bichlal. Leper actually means inside or small man. It means something like that in Latin. It means small person, I think it is. Leprechaun is small person of the field or something like that. It's got a meaning in Latin. But I don't care. My etymology is not so great, and I can suggest this answer and say that's the original reason of leprechaun. Happens to work out in Latin as well. I like this answer a lot, so it works out perfectly by me. And genie's also, we'll just put in a genie over here. Maybe they put in a little thing that you rubbed, whatever. Either way, regardless, how do we understand those two answers? That there's gold in the walls and there's riches in the walls. So here's the idea. Wolfson says this as well, but the idea is supposed to be the following. You should know, using money from somebody that's not a good person, not a good idea. It hurts you. If you take money from somebody who worked on Shabbos, somebody who works on Shabbos gives you money and says use it for whatever you want, it actually hurts the person who takes it. If you give money to tzedakah, and that money is money that you just used to work on Shabbos, for example, you worked on Shabbos be'isr, not as a caterer or whatever, we're not going to get into that. You worked on Shabbos, you went ahead and you built a house on Shabbos. You got $100 for that work on Shabbos itself. You went and you gave that $100 to tzedakah. If a guy used that money in tzedakah, the guy goes ahead and takes that money, it's going to hurt him. It's not going to do any good. Hasidim are very careful, not all of them. Hasidim are very careful to be very careful about where their money comes from. You should know, the Brisker yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael do not take any money from the government in Eretz Yisrael. They don't hold of the government. They hold that the government in Eretz Yisrael is not for them. So therefore, they don't take a single penny from them. They refuse to take a penny. Because of that, Brisk is always in a lot of financial trouble. Because they don't get all the money that every other yeshiva gets. Every other yeshiva gets 700 shekel per guy that they have in yeshiva. So if yeshiva has 100 guys, they're already getting, you know, something like 70,000 shekel. They're making a lot of money. But Brisk does not take a penny. So all their money comes from donations. And even then, the Brisker Rov is always very careful to check out the people who are donating to him. The guy said, I want to give you $100. Brisker Rov would go up to him and say, where do you get that $100 from? Tell me about your life. Do you keep Shabbos? Do you keep Kashrus? Do you keep Kol Yisrael? He would go ahead and he'd check out who the guy was. And if he wasn't a perfect person, Brisker Rov wouldn't take money from him. And they still keep that today. Rav Avraham Yeshua and Rav David, they don't take money from those people. The fact is, that type of money, although you don't think so, is very mazik. It hurts the person and it takes it down. The only way to make the money good is by doing a mitzvah with it. You got to do a mitzvah with that money, somehow doing that, and all of a sudden it becomes good. The Amori's money, these Goyim's money that they put inside the wall is not good for a Jew to have. The Jew's not going to gain anything out of that money, and in fact, he's going to lose out because of that money. He's going to lose out a tremendous amount because of that money. He's going to become tamei because of that money. So he shouldn't take it at all. He should release his hands from that money and say, you know what, I don't want to touch it. So what do we make the guy do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes him do a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? I'm going to give you tzaras in your house, and then you're going to have to knock down the wall. The mitzvah is to knock down that wall. When you knock down that wall, doing a mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you did a mitzvah of not only knocking down the wall of Hashem, you're willing to be moser nefesh. Do you know how much money it costs to build up a house again? Do you know how much money it's going to cost to build up that wall? It's going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars to build up your house again. This guy's willing to give up that money. That mitzvah, that mesiras nefesh that you do, is enough to make the money holy, to make it tahor. And for that, you'll get the money and it's going to be good, and the tumah will be gone. And then everything's going to be good inside your house. That's the idea of Yantaras Batim and the two answers of Shimon Bar Yochai. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.